The poorest of the poor are defined as those making less than $1.25 a day. This group is also often unbanked, meaning that individuals do not have access to banks. Without ways to borrow or save easily, making large purchases is difficult, if not impossible. Microfinance seeks to fill this gap by giving micro-entrepreneurs the ability to borrow, to purchase inputs into their businesses and create additional profits. For example, a woman could purchase a goat, which would produce both milk and more goats, or a seamstress could purchase a sewing machine. Of course, poor micro-entrepreneurs don't have much in the way of a credit history or income documentation. To decrease the risk of default, many microfinance institutions, or MFIs, land on a group lending model, meaning that borrowers choose others that they know and trust to borrow with them in a group, each guaranteeing the loans of all group members. This model assumes that borrowers will choose known, creditworthy co-borrowers and that peer pressure will ensure repayment. This model was pioneered by Nobel Prize winner Dr. Muhammad Yunus, founder of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, and has been adopted by many MFIs in India, Africa, and Latin America. In addition, the loans are for small amounts with short terms, ranging from 1 month to 1 year, with frequent payment dates, perhaps weekly. In the last decade, U.S. donors from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to individuals have poured philanthropic dollars into organizations dedicated to providing microloans. One case in point is Kiva, which collects funds online from individuals who direct their funds to micro-entrepreneurs featured on the website. And Kiva's structure has been reproduced by World Vision and others. The concept of microfinance resonates with Western donors, who like the idea of teaching someone how to fish instead of merely giving aid. Microfinance has grown so quickly that profit-seeking corporations and banks have entered the industry, competing alongside not-for-profit MFIs. A few of these corporations have even held IPOs, attracting public investors. Some countries pass new laws, making it easier for MFIs to organize and operate in their countries. However, since the global economic crisis, microfinance has had some bad publicity. In some countries, political leaders have blamed MFIs for the economic woes of its citizens, even in the case of Nicaragua, urging microborrowers not to repay their loans. In India, media reports of over-indebted borrowers committing suicide have made headlines around the world. Suddenly, MFIs are being criticized for their high interest rates and accused of questionable collection practices and lack of transparency. Some countries, such as India, have proposed new laws capping interest rates. So, is microfinance the key to economic development or just another word for predatory lending? The answer is, we don't know. Proponents point to individual success stories of micro-entrepreneurs and their families who have flourished through the help of microloans, but economic studies have not shown communities as a whole developing because of microfinance. Interest rates of 20 to 30% or more are higher than the much lower rates charged by U.S. banks, but not compared to credit card rates, given higher rates of inflation and operating costs of MFIs in remote areas. Finally, if loans are not used to stimulate profit-generating activities, but instead are used for emergencies, medical bills, school fees, or other consumption, then paying back the loan is nearly impossible for someone making about a dollar a day. Just as we have seen in the U.S., access to credit can be a critical and important tool or a weapon of self-destruction. This is Christine Hurt.